sportsalcohol.com podcast. Another installment in our series of episodes about 1999 albums, 20 years later, where we talk about our experiences with them then and now. So this one is about Fiona Apple's album. I was going to have the whole title up. Hold on. I'm going to say the whole title one. Fiona Apple's album, When the Pawn Hits the Conflicts, He Thinks Like a King. What he knows throws the blows when he goes to the fight, and he'll win the whole thing, for he enters the ring. There's nobody to better when your mind is your might. So when you go solo, you hold your own hand, and remember that depth is the greatest of heights. And if you know where you stand, then you know where to land. And if you fall, it won't matter, because you'll know that you're right. Once again, Fiona Apple album. So go around and introduce yourselves and say, you could say, you know, just say like your favorite Fiona Apple song of all, because I feel like we don't need to limit ourselves to this record. That said, I'm Jesse, and probably my favorite Fiona Apple song is Fast As You Can from this record.
I'm Sarah, and my favorite Fiona Apple song is Paper Bag from this record.
Rob, bring it home.
My name is Rob, and my favorite Fiona Apple song is also Fast As You Can from this record.
All right, wow. So what we were doing, the three questions we're asking on these mini episodes are, you know, what was your relationship with this album at the time? What is your relationship now? And is it the best album by this artist? So the first question is, what was your relationship with When the Pawn at the time in 1999, or when you first heard it, or whatever? Sarah, you were still fairly young. In 1999, yes. You were not the wizened 19-year-old or the wizened 20-year-old that Rob and I were.
Right, yes.
Did you listen to it at the time? Was this on your radar as a 13-ish something-year-old?
I want to say maybe it was, but my impression of Fiona Apple was maybe a little skewed, because I remember just being very intimidated by what was that music video?
Criminal.
Uh-huh. Yes. And really only knowing her from that, as probably most people.
Right, that was her big thing.
That was her thing.
And the video is memorable.
Yes. And being a child.
Yeah.
Basically. And maybe being sort of told maybe not to pay so much attention that music. And so I think my impression of her was maybe a bit wrong-headed, or I mean, I guess she is sort of a confrontational figure in music, but I don't know that I listened to the full album when I was young. I think I came to it a little later, although yeah, I do remember maybe getting it from the library.
Oh, so it's before college, probably.
Before college.
I feel like it's good teenage music.
I think it is. Yeah. She's sort of like your gateway to maybe Cat Power or something like that, right?
I don't know. It prepares you for the idea that your favorite artist couldn't be like uncomfortable on stage also.
Mm, or like, yeah, people who maybe are a little ahead of their time and speaking truth to power
from
the stage of MTV Video Music Awards. That's right. Or whatever it was that happened.
Uh-huh. It was exactly that, I think. So was this record a big deal when you heard it? Did you connect to it right away, or was it, you know, I feel like this one came a little bit after the like Lilith Fair boom of like lady singer songwriters of the late 90s, but the first record was very much in that zone, like in 97.
Mm. Yeah. Although seems like she would probably be too aggressive for Lilith.
She might have been. Yeah, right. It is a little more like, yeah, her music does feel a little more. I mean, like, although Liz Phair was on it and her stuff is kind of, you know, a little in your face. But I feel like the difference, as someone who listened to a lot of both of them at the time, like, Liz is like confrontational in a playful way. Mm. And there's not much there's some things that are playful about Fiona Apple's music, but especially if you're coming to her for knowing her from the stuff on Tidal and knowing Criminal specifically, it doesn't seem like, you know, there's not the kind of wink that sometimes Liz adds to her, to her sort of wry sense of humor. And you don't really think of Fiona Apple as someone who has like maybe a terrific like sense of
humor
or irony, which is not that's not bad at all. It's a very different vibe. Right?
Having seen her perform, I can say no.
Yeah.
She really does not seem like she has any sense of humor. But, you know, God love her for it. Somebody who writes a song like Limp is maybe not someone who, she has a lot of anger in her.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually kind of, as a teenager, I latched onto that idea very, very eagerly, because there aren't a lot of female artists, even today, although maybe more so now. But certainly back then, well, that I had access to.
Yeah, well, they were. It was such more. It seemed like so much more on the margin, like a really, like you would, yeah, maybe like a punk band.
Yeah,
like,
that I might not have really heard being a girl in Iowa. But yeah. I mean, Criminal did get like radio airplay.
Yeah,
stuff,
well, it's
so.
Like it's kind of, you know, it's kind of torchy and ballady, and it's like very, and especially that first record is very piano driven.
Yeah.
And that's a very different way to hear like an angry, to hear anger music than,
because
it's not like the kind of the rush. She has a really soulful and deep voice instead of like the really rough and kind of, you know, punky voice.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's
but kind of incongruous.
Yeah. In a cool way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rob, I don't feel like we've ever really talked about Fiona Apple very much. Like, did you listen to this album when it came out? We were sophomores in college, I think, when this came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think we kind of did. Or maybe a little bit more when this came out, as opposed to when she was breaking big off of Tidal and the Criminal single, because it was just kind of ubiquitous if you were
really
like
was.
A teenager watching MTV. And I wanted to piggyback off of something that that Sarah said about kind of the maybe not even the impression that she gave off then when she was touring on Tidal, but maybe the impression people were taking of her as somebody who just did a very long car trip and listened to a bunch of episodes of the podcast You're Wrong About, I'm sorry, is the name of the podcast. the big takeaway from that show is that if your impression of anything that happened in the 90s was given to you by the media, you may want to re-examine. You know, what did we know about Fiona Apple beyond that very risque video that she, later regretted actually doing? Like, it wasn't her idea, it was the director's idea, you know, and on her first record, she didn't feel like she could say no to people. Yeah, we knew that she kind of lost her shit at the VMAs. I don't think it super helped that she was like a teenage white girl quoting Maya Angelou, but you know, her primary point was that the whole thing, that whole show, the whole thing was, you know, in her words, bullshit. And as the kids say today, where's the lie? But with this record, I remember when I first heard about it, like, oh, it's a 100-word poem is the name of the title. I was like, oh, so I guess she's just leaning into it. But really listening to it, and, you know, yeah, I knew, you know, I had a co-ed floor in my dorm, so I listened to this record a bunch. I was like, this is good as hell. And I looked it up today. Sales-wise, this did about a third of what Tidal did in America. And I remember that was my feeling at the time. I was like, this is a way more musically interesting album. And you people who made me sit through the Never Is a Promise video when it came on MTV don't seem to care. And I don't get it.
Yeah, it is. I listened to both of them today again. I had listened to With the Pawn a couple of times this week. And I listened to Tidal again for the first time in ages. I can't remember the last time I listened to Tidal. It's not really a record I listened to a bunch. I got it like for a couple bucks used like years after, maybe even after I got With the Pawn. And it has like some good songs on it. Criminal's a good song, as you can see currently in the film Hustlers, starring Jennifer Lopez, in which she, in a fairly memorable scene, maybe hopefully her Oscar clip, is her pole dancing to Fiona Apple's Criminal. But it's kind of a dirgy title. It's like a lot of, it's like really piano ballad-y. And When the Pawn is still like, I think where it's really well balanced, because it's very piano driven, but it's just much more sophisticated musically, and it feels like there's more stuff going on. She's using the piano kind of bass in a more interesting way, where the title really kind of feels like it's a girl on the piano record, which is cool. I mean, there aren't really that many of those, even in like peak Lil Fair times. But yeah, When the Pawn is like a big leap forward. So of course, yeah, it was not just even like the tempo of the songs, it varies a lot more. Title, they're all pretty like that, you know, kind of plodding rhythm to it. Criminal's like one of the most up-tempo songs on it. And when the pawn, like, you're seeing my bias here for sort of up-tempo stuff, because the saying that fast as you can is my favorite, but that song has a really cool, like, you know, jittery rhythm to it that's very different from anything on Tidal. And, you know, Sarah talking about, you know, her sort of angrier stuff, like Limp, like, that is, like, even though it's not as kind of heavy sounding as some of the stuff on Tidal in terms of mood, it's like, it's really propulsive. And she, again, uses the piano really well in that song. And it's a very cutting, really cutting, like wonderfully kind of mean song that that I don't think she was in the headspace to deliver on Tidal. So yeah, you could see her. Yeah. The jump forward in this album is significant. It's interesting, 'cause I feel like the stereotype is the sophomore album that, is the, you know, the first album you have 10 years to make or whatever, and the second one you have 6 months to make or whatever people say about that. But it seemed like that was, maybe because she was super young, that was not necessarily the same dynamic, because she was like only like 20 or something when 19 or 20 when Tidal came out. So maybe she didn't really have 10 years to make the first album.
Yeah, I actually thought she was younger when Tidal came out.
Yeah, I think she said 78 that she was born? 77, yeah. She's the same age as Star Wars. A couple months younger than Star Wars. Yeah, it's very weird to think of her as, I mean, I never thought of her as being my age necessarily, but it's weird to think that, like, oh, Fiona Apple's 42.
Yeah.
Really makes me feel fucking old. And yeah, I feel similar as Rob. Like, I was in, I didn't pay a ton of attention to Tidal, except that it was pretty hard to avoid. And then whenever I did eventually hear this, I was like, oh, wow, I feel like I got this from like a BMG order or something, because that was still something you might do. Either that or like cdnow.com were probably the two places I could have gotten this record. But yes, so do you guys still, I mean, I hadn't listened to her in a while, just because she's not always in my head, because she doesn't put out that much music. Did anyone read the interview with her with Vulture pretty recently? They kind of reached out to her because of her song being in Hustlers.
Oh,
And I didn't, so I haven't really absorbed it. But do you guys feel like, do you guys still like reach for this one, for When the Pawn?
I don't think I reach for this album as a whole. When we were talking about doing this whole project, this was one of the albums that was on my list and I listened to. Sometimes I will listen to the individual songs. I'm like, oh yeah, that's pretty good. It, I think, benefits a lot from both the time it came out being like pre-mixing your album for MP3s, pre-structuring your songs for streams. So it's kind of like peak lush, peak loudness. And also it was like the ascendancy, like 1999, hell of a year for John Bryan, who produced this. And, also produced Amy Mann's work on the Magnolia soundtrack, which he also scored. Fiona is the leading, you know, is clearly the leading creative force here. And he, you know, he has gone out of his way in interviews to say that, like, there's some stuff on there that kind of sounds like him, but, you know, it's mostly her. Like, he just kind of brought like a couple of different sounds and textures and a particular drummer that he wanted to work with her. But like, yeah, you can really feel that. So like putting on a song like that just kind of reminds you just like how much I have trouble explaining it, but just music kind of sounded a certain way in the late 90s, where it just felt like as artists were starting to feel more comfortable mixing genres, like they're also using like the entire sonic spectrum. It's like, oh yeah, this is like peak that. And that's probably why I liked it so much at the time.
Sarah, what about you? Do you is this something you listen to much in 2019, 20 years later?
I do. Of all her albums, it's probably this one with the most recent one.
The Eye of the
Wheel.
Which
also has a really long title to it.
You're like, long title or Get the Fuck Out?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, the only problem is I don't know that any of her records are on vinyl. Or at least not
Tidal was released for the first time on vinyl like 2 or 3 years ago. It's a Vinyl Me Please exclusive. And I think, I haven't heard anything about any of the other ones.
So where's the anniversary copy of this one?
Yeah, I'm surprised, totally actually. Yeah.
Because her albums, to me, benefit from listening to as a whole. Especially this one. But She's somebody that I never really think to put on, but when I hear something of hers come up, I'm like, Fiona Apple, she's fucking great. which is a shame, I think. And maybe if she were more prolific, I would think of her more often. But she does seem kind of content to just go when the mood strikes or when it speaks to her. And she works when she wants to, which is kind of, you know.
Yeah, if she can, I would love to, if you could afford to do that, that's awesome. And it is, like, it's comforting when an artist that you like is, like, not in the position where they have to like, put out an album every, 18 months or else they're going to be out on the streets. I guess I was looking at quickly at that interview, the song in Hustlers is the first time she's licensed one of her songs for a movie, which I was like, that can't be true. I almost, like, didn't believe it.
No, that's not true, because Paper Bag is in Bridesmaids.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they're fucking... This world is bullshit.
Didn't know that.
In the interview, it talks a little bit about her, about the kind of weirdness of stuff being like she talks about, like, being in a tiff with Panic at the Disco because they were, like, didn't react well to her being uncertain about licensing a sample or something on some dumb shit. It's as if they needed any more recent dislike Panic at the Disco. But, yeah.
I did not.
Yeah, Rob can confirm. I needed no pretense. That's one of those things that probably just gets repeated, like, ad nauseum, like, because people can't remember past 5 years ago. And Bridesmaids does indeed fall to the 8 years ago. But I think you said it's definitely not like stuff where she's not like hustling out an album constantly. Her songs aren't like ubiquitous in movies or ads, certainly. And that is, it's sort of nice that it's that precious, although you do start to miss, like, she just kind of falls out of the rotation because you're not thinking, like, sometimes I put on older albums by artists I like in anticipation of a new one or whatever. Although she says in this interview that she's finishing up a new one.
Awesome.
Which makes, I feel like the last one was like 2012 or something. So
it
I feel
was
like
a while,
it's,
though.
Yeah. And then the kind of final question for all these is, I feel like we know the answer that we're all going to give. Is this the best Fiona Apple album? It seems like we all kind of think it is. Is this?
I think it's the tightest, right? Because Tidal is sort of her, maybe not even really, I don't know the background of how it was recorded or how it was even discovered, but it seems like something she maybe did in her bedroom.
And it's Criminal, I guess, again, this interview, they allude to it. I guess they needed a single and she wrote it in like 45 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
So she can snap to it when she needs to, we're finding out.
So maybe it's a little corporatized and not exactly representative of who she was as an artist or a person. And this record felt more like her announcing, well, this is what I'm actually about. And it's a very tight record, I think. It's 10, 12 songs?
Yeah, 10 songs, 42 minutes.
Yeah, so, like, fairly contained as far as she goes. But still very, you know, her lyrics are one of my favorite things about her. She's an incredible lyricist. And she can say a lot with a little, except in her album titles, apparently. But
I've had like a longstanding. I do think this is her best album, but it really. And this is not. This is probably a record label thing. It really bugs me, like in a grammarian kind of way, that it's abbreviated as "When the Pawn" and not "When the Pawn Hits." Because why would you cut off the verb? Like, "When the Pawn" is a, you know, "When the Pawn Hits" is like evocative to me. "When the Pawn" is like, really, you can feel the ... and maybe that's the intent, but like, even the, you know, the other one, the long title, you can call it they call it the Idler Wheel for sure. That's for sure, and that makes sense, and then it's actually longer. But the "When the Pawn," I always, from the jump, like when I first saw this album, I was like, but why cut it off? Really. So as far as I'm concerned, the song, this album is "When the Pawn Hits."
I know that nobody cares, but I just want to mention that Jesse has been complaining about this for 20 years.
Yes. Rob is my witness. This is not a complaint, like, I came up with yesterday.
You know, if there's any crossover from the people who hate Reed Jesse when he writes for the AV Club, if there's one thing I want you to know is that it's all real. None of it's an act. This is just who he is.
Everything you hate about me is me. But Sarah, you mentioned, so you would put Idler Wheel as, like, if that's this, is that the one that's battling it for first or battling for second?
I think so, because, like, Extraordinary Machine is the only other one, and maybe I'm misremembering, but it felt like that took a the Wild come out and she was maybe unhappy with parts of it, or it doesn't feel as cohesive, or maybe as
I think the yes, drum, so is, Rob, is it the oh, so, Rob, you probably know this.
Yeah, so speaking of John Bryan, who when did he anyways, this was a
where
hot
is
time
he now?
For him.
What's going on with him?
He scored Lady Bird.
So,
oh, okay.
So they got together again for in 2002, I think, to record this. They basically did the whole album and then it didn't come out. And so her fans actually like protested in front of a record label, not knowing that it was actually her choice to re-record the album with a different producer.
Interesting.
Yeah, I remember that being kind of a weird muddle. And it's weird because, like, I think how it ends up on the final record, the title song is Brian produced. It's got that, like, you know, that kind of, like, kind of, like, orchestral zing that, like, kind of thing. And I mean, maybe the last song is all, like, I feel like two songs on it are two or three are John Bryan, and the rest are the guy who produced The Chronic. Do I have that right?
I don't know. No comment.
Oh, no, it's Mike Elizondo, right? Who is he?
I researched exactly one producer for this podcast. I'm sorry.
He produced some stuff for Eminem. He produced, he co-produced In the Club. So, yeah, he's like a hip hop guy. And he ended up doing a lot of the tracks, and I guess by her choice. And I actually, that's the one I like most after When the Pawn, I would say, although it's another one I haven't listened to in forever, but yeah, I think it has a kind, it's like a little punchier When the Pawn, Idler Wheel. I think you can kind of like, I can smell that haze of pot smoke a little, maybe too strongly on that one. I just feel like the kind of, it's a little more, I don't know. It feels a little less focused to me.
The Idler Wheel. That one has like some killer all-time like breakup songs though.
Yeah.
You can tell she's like really pissed at Jonathan Ames.
We all?
Yeah. it's just the one with Hot Knife.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I love the rhythm of that song. That's a cool little like.
There's a great one. I think it was in an episode of Girls Valentine where when Adam's getting like drunk.
Okay.
For the first time again. That one's really good. Werewolf is another really good one.
Oh, yeah.
That has the really, really good line of, I think it's in the chorus, nothing wrong when a song ends in a minor key.
Uh-huh.
Which is like a really kind of punchy breakup line. But yeah, she's, I really dig her.
Yeah.
To get back into her.
Yeah.
She deserves a revisit. Because I think she's sort of that kind of weird eccentric that women aren't really allowed or kind of frowned upon for them to be.
Yeah.
She's sort of maybe a little aggressive and not very nice maybe to interviewers or in media.
I think she's, it sounds to me, she always reads to me like she just can't kind of bullshit politely.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is
not in her.
Which makes her an interesting interview, but probably also a tricky one. I mean, like, and I feel like, and even the stuff I've read of hers, at least especially the last 5-6 years when she does give an interview, it never seems hostile. It seems, if anything, really open, but in a way that probably is kind of uncomfortable. And it's a weird kind of dovetail with how she is on stage. I mean, I've only seen her once, and I think it was touring Extraordinary Machine eventually.
She's a good performer. It's just, it's like Cat Power. If she gets too in her head, she'll literally leave the stage and she won't.
Yeah.
She didn't do an encore because she didn't want to.
Uh-huh.
You know?
When I saw her, she was like pretty polished professional, but you could tell there was a sort of discomfort with the like the spaces in between the performances.
Oh,
Like that you kind of.
The banter.
Yeah. The kind of like putting on a show aspect of it. I feel like you could tell she would really dig into the songs. And I feel like I got the sense that if she could just somehow have the stamina to just play each song without stopping in the middle and just kind of push through that, and maybe even then end the show in 45 minutes rather than the standard, you know, 80 or 90, that she would probably be happier with an arrangement more like that. It's interesting how many of the, like, to read about Liz Phair too, like, now she seems pretty comfortable on stage, but I mean, she talks a lot about how around this same period, in like 97, 98, she was touring a lot and did not feel comfortable on stage at all. Rob, this is also your favorite Fiona album, right?
Yeah.
It's unanimous.
For the reasons we described.
It is sportsalcohol.com certified, the best Fiona Apple record. And I don't, you know, I always feel this isn't a first album thing. I've talked before on this about like how much I don't like the first album syndrome of like, oh, I really like the first one and everything else has not been good since then. Maybe you haven't been as good since then. think about your life. So this isn't that, but I do feel bad whenever there's like an artist where I'm like, oh yeah, there's one from 20 years ago is her best one, but she only has four, so it's right. what else could you do? Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. I'm not discounting, you know, six or seven records worth of good material by by choosing this one. But yeah, supposedly, you know, maybe she said she's finishing up her record. It's 2019 now, so you figure 2022. We'll have a new, when the 10-year anniversary vinyl of Idler Wheel comes out, we will also have a new Fiona album record.
Or maybe she's just going to go like full Malik and just, you know, she's just waiting until she gets old to get real prolific.
Oh, yeah. Love that. Love the late, the surprise late period. How there's like 200% more Terrence Malik movies now than there were 10 years ago. I sound maybe sarcastic, but I think that's awesome. So yeah, I'm hoping that from 45 to 85, Fiona will just be putting out an album every 4 months like she's Bob Pollard or some shit.
I mean, and she's always had kind of, you know, those cool aunt, your parents won't tell you why they don't talk to her vibes. So, you know, when she's just the appropriate age for that, maybe that's right. When she just achieves her final form.
The final form of Fiona Apple, we're all very much looking forward to. I let the beast in too
soon. I don't know how to live without my handler's throat. I fight him always. All right, let's get her on the horn. I think she's gonna like our plan.
And I think she'll just would love talking to us. Her no bullshit policy would be so well met by.
I would bet she still has a landline. So, you know, we can probably catch her.
She, this interview with Vulture talks about her. I believe they contacted her via a Hotmail address. So how much? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sarah just swooned, I think.
Amazing. That is amazing.
How come when Fiona Apple does it, it's cool, but when our friend Derek does it, we hate it?
I was just thinking, Derek, does Derek still use his Hotmail? Because I was going to say that this ruins my quip that the only person I know who has a Hotmail address is my dad, and he has been dead for 7 years. But I'm sure so. I guess Derek and Fiona Apple have them too.
Jenny, first of all, Jesus. Jesus Christ. And second of all, use is kind of a strong word because, like, I emailed him, like, I'm coming to town. I didn't hear from him for like a week. So I texted him and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I only check my email every 1.5 weeks now. And I was so jealous.